across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, that would be me. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, March 20th, 2024. Another beautiful day to have you here up north. We're live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, social media, and podcast. Nice to have you along however you got here. I got a question for you. Did you realize we flipped from winter to spring overnight? I mean, officially? Officially, as in not really, because we've had a whole bunch of spring days, and now we're having a bunch of winter days in the spring. Theater of Seasons, kids. It's all about the Theater of Seasons, and Brittany Merlot will have our forecast, including the last range that Sherry and I saw on some forecasts were, depending on where you were, 1 to 9 inches. So we're gonna try to pin down Ms. Merlot a little further on that about an hour from now. Here's what else is coming up this morning. When it comes to a changing climate, the bad news about its impact can be accompanied by some good news about the economic opportunities that come when you move toward a cleaner and greener economy. Unfortunately, the climate for new jobs is downright hostile among Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature. They seem downright allergic to job creation. We'll hear more as Melissa Baldoff is joined by Assembly Minority Leader Greta Neubauer coming up at about 6:30 this morning. In our second hour, just how badly is the legislature failing to hold up its end of the bargain to fund the education of Wisconsin kids? Here's how bad. 4 out of every 5 school districts in the state have found it necessary at some point to ask people to raise their own property taxes just to maintain the current level of services, which may have sounded necessary at some point, but how does it sound now when state legislators have been sitting on a multi-billion dollar surplus, and yet there are still 91 school referendums around the state? We're going to learn more from two members of the Chippewa Falls School District Administration about the referendum here, and then, of course, the bigger picture, what all of these school districts have to deal with because of a legislature that has been gerrymandered to the right wing for many years, and the potential for better times come November with fairer maps. We'll also have Todd Alba coming along to tell us what's on his afternoon show. And there's a contest to tell you about as well. First, let's go over some of the cooler temperatures here in Chippewa Falls. It's 21 degrees right now. Hayward's at 17. Park Falls, 18. Wausau reporting 23 degrees. Green Bay, 26. La Crosse, 26. Wisconsin Rapids, 24 degrees. Oshkosh is at 28. Madison is at 30. And it is 27 in Waukesha, where we find Greg Bach, who spins the dials, flips the levers, and otherwise just continues to use the bellows on the fireplace and shovel coal into it to keep this little engine that could rolling along. Mr. Bach, good morning.
Chugga, chugga, choo-choo.
That's what you need, like an engineer's cap if you're gonna be running this train, you know.
Really quick question for you, Pat. Before the show, we were talking about where you live up in Lake Wissota, and you mentioned there's Little Lake Wissota.
Yes.
Were they just like, eh, we're smaller, just call it that. It's fine.
Well, it actually is a separate body. Remember, this whole thing was formed by, you know, building a dam.
Yeah.
And so what the dam did when it went up was the water filled in some of the, I wouldn't call them valleys, but, you know, some of the low spots, but there were farms on there and everything else. And so these low spots where there were farms filled up, and it just happens to be that there's a divide there, which is part natural, but it was part created by when they ran train tracks through there. And so there's actually a very long, I don't know what you'd call it, a berm or something, that divides the two with just a narrow channel that goes under a bridge. And I was telling Greg off air the story earlier, and everybody listening to 93.5 The Tap in Chippewa Falls knows this story well, that the railroad bridge, you know, that divides Lake Wissota from Little Lake Wissota sits very low. And so not not many boats are small enough to get underneath it. And for years and years and years, there's been talk about trying to get the bridge raised, but it would cost a lot of money. The railroads aren't really willing to get involved in this. And so, yeah, you have this separate lake where if you've got a boat small enough to get under there, it's like your own little playground just for the just for the little boats that can go through.
The little boats on Little Lake Wisota. It's hard to say.
Little Lake Wisota.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. The things I learned about Wisconsin, I love it.
Yeah, and then right near the railroad bridge is what's called the island. And because it's an island. But again, once upon a time, there was a farm there, and it was just one of the hills on the farm. And, you know, over the years, that hill, of course, has been, that island has been kind of disintegrating, falling into the lake. It probably won't happen in our lifetime, but it's a lot smaller than it used to be. But it's also a place where, shall we say, the kids go to play on the weekends. You know, it's just got, it looks like, you ever see those pictures from like Lake of the Ozarks where it almost looks like you could walk across the lake on people's boats?
Yeah.
There's so many of them. That's what it's like around the island there in the summertime.
That sounds lovely. So,
it is a lot of good places to play there. The Up North News Daily Newsletter is out, of course, as it is every morning at 5 a.m. You can sign up for that over at upnorthnewswi.com. I was going to mention the contest as well. What do we call that thing there, Greg? Ride into spring.
Ride into spring.
Because there's grand prizes of bicycles involved in this thing, as well as overnight stays at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. There's outdoor patio furniture. There's a 3-in-1 blender, all kinds of good stuff. And what I don't know, and maybe you do, but there are four winners each day because we play the game four times a day at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., 3 p.m.
Yep.
But I wonder if they give a list at the end of the day of the texts that they draw so we can tell people who the winners are. You don't see anything like that about yesterday's winners, do you?
I didn't see anything come through. I believe they contact the winners directly. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. Be like, so it's so-and-so from Manitowish Waters. Another place that's interesting. It's like Manitowish will be the same, but we're next to Waters.
it's better.
Yeah, it's water. It's, yeah, you know? Right. It's exactly. Like
location.
Exactly.
For folks who missed it yesterday, what the Ride into Spring text contest is, it's a statewide contest across the civic media stations, all of them, the music stations, the talk stations, and the key to it all is having the civic media app. He said, opening it on his phone right now, so he could show the folks watching on Facebook and things like that. Oh, that's really bright. But anyway, there's my phone. There's my civic media app that's currently tuned to the Shaw, WAUK. But you can pick any of the stations in the civic media constellation and give a listen. But also, it's got a text feature. And four times a day, there's going to be a different keyword that's mentioned. You use the text feature on the app. You text that keyword back to one of the radio stations, and that's it. You're entered. You'll be entered, and then four times a day, one of those texts is drawn randomly to win an overnight getaway to Chula Vista Resort, and then you're automatically entered in for the grand prize as well, which involves the aforementioned bicycles, outdoor furniture, and things like that. So be listening at about 7:07 when Brittany Merlot joins us as well. And get set to hear today's keyword, text it in, and be part of the contest. As we unpack some of the news at 6:15, we're going to start with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who on the one hand, yesterday, referred to some of Donald Trump's more spirited supporters as whack jobs and morons, and said that they were out of touch with reality for trying to recall him because he wouldn't do enough to help Donald Trump cheat and win the election in 2020. And then later, when asked if he would endorse Donald Trump for president, Robin Voss said yes, he endorses Donald Trump for president. So Robin Voss continues his effort to try to have it both ways to get the best out of cozying up, to put it politely, to Donald Trump, and at the same time having to deal with the people who love him more than Robin Voss does the people that he referred to as whack jobs and morons. This was all mentioned at a WISPolitics.com luncheon yesterday, where Voss was the guest of honor and was taking, you know, questions from reporters and other attendees. And he was asked, of course, about the petitions that were turned in last week by those folks who were seeking a recall election, even though, you know, Voss's seat will be up in November, but it's not stopping, you know, these folks who have the audacity to refer to Robin Voss as a rhino because he's not Republican enough because he wouldn't help Donald Trump cheat back in 2020. Well, the recall effort may fail. It already appears that they don't have enough valid signatures from the current district. It's not quite clear yet if there are enough signatures from the new district, and it's not clear which one of those standards is used for a recall election. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has agreed to at least review the arguments and may then give advice at that point. Although by the time all of that happens, it's going to be time for the regular election anyway. But go figure, a big part of the problem from the Trump supporters gathering these signatures on recall petitions and turning them in is that a whole lot of the signatures were apparently fake, were fraudulent, were put there without the permission of the people whose names were signed. As Voss put it, there was a ton of fraud. Voss claims up to 400 duplicated signatures, missing and misspelled information, and the names of people who didn't actually sign, including his own. Apparently somebody signed Robin Voss's name to a recall petition to recall Robin Voss. He predicted that fewer than half of the nearly 11,000 signatures submitted will be found to be valid. And he said he hopes that the Wisconsin Elections Commission will refer to local prosecutors anyone determined to have committed a crime related to the petition circulation, which is rich when you consider that this is the same Robin Voss who has been working so hard to undermine the Wisconsin Elections Commission, to fire or impeach the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. But now, when he's the one facing trouble, he's really hoping that the Wisconsin Elections Commission will come through for him, get these other whack jobs and morons charged, and just forget all of that little business about Robin Voss trying to, you know, eliminate the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Just another day in Wisconsin politics. It's another day on the campaign trail because Donald Trump is lying through his teeth. I'll talk about that in just about 90 seconds. Wherever you're listening, across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up in today's history lesson, about a half hour from now, we'll tell you why we're playing that tune about the Man in Motion song from St. Elmo's Fire, part of today's musical history in just a little bit here. One other note from WISP Politics. We were mentioning the luncheon that they had yesterday. They also reported late yesterday that Scott Mayer, the businessman from Franklin, told WISP Politics he has decided against running for U.S. Senate to avoid a, quote, bloody primary with Eric Hovde that he feared would damage Republican chances of beating Democratic incumbent Tammy Baldwin, which shows you a guy who remembers his history, because it was in 2012 when Tommy Thompson emerged from a bruising 3 or 4 candidate primary that Tammy Baldwin was able to win the general election because Tommy Thompson was so damaged coming out of that primary. Scott Mayer saying he's not going to be responsible for a bitter, divisive primary in the Republican Party this time around. It's still possible that other people will get in the race, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, among others. But at this point, it looks like Eric Hovde is having the lane cleared for him. You can do that when you have a lot of money. His ads have been running quite regularly here in the Chippewa Valley, and I'm sure across Wisconsin as well. There's one featuring his wife saying that she would vote for him. Okay, well, thanks for spending money on that one. And then there's the one where he's
standing in a bar, and I want to reach through the screen. I want to reach through the screen. Okay, I know. I'm going to get the old man bell. I want to reach that screen and button that extra button on his shirt that he's undone, because we're not in California anymore, Eric Hovde. And where's the gold chains? Button that top button. Anyway, but there in that commercial, the larger point is him saying, I don't need a salary. If you elect me as your senator, I will donate it to charity. He doesn't say which charity, which raises a whole new set of questions, you know, based on what we learned about Tim Michaels when he ran for governor and some of the rather extreme things that he defined as charity, that, you know, digitally tracked women who visited clinics that provide abortion. So I'd certainly like to know more about that from Eric Hovde. But again, if a guy is so wealthy that he does not need the job, he does not need the salary, then you'd better work extra hard to prove to us that you're going to be on the side of, you know, Wisconsin and not on the side of the, you know, the upper crust that you come from now. You can claim Wisconsin roots all day long, but in the category of what have you done for us lately? Again, all we've seen is, you know, the operation of a California bank and holding a bunch of real estate. So, you know, unlike, say, Herb Kohl, when a very rich guy got into the race, he had, you know, 10 plus years of political activity behind him. We knew what he stood for. We knew what he would do. Eric Hovde, not so much. But at least at this point, he does not face primary opposition. All right, I'm going to tell you about a couple of things that Donald Trump said on the campaign trail. If you want to react at any point here, you can call or text us. The number is 855-75-CIVIC. 855-75-CIVIC is what gets you through here. And it's something that Trump said again, that he said over the weekend, and it's about the war in Israel and the Gaza Strip against Hamas. And obviously, there are very strong emotions. There are very strong actions. There's very strong consequences here in the United States for candidates from both political parties. And as a result, it is as important as ever not to go off the deep end. There's enough extremism as there is out there. And yet here goes Donald Trump, full-blown extremist, saying you can't be Jewish and vote Democratic. You don't get to say that. And no different than I've seen the bumper stickers that say you can't be Catholic and vote Democrat. No, you don't get to say that. That's not your call to make. If you want to put people in a pen based on your view of a particular religion or ideology, then you do that with the people that you can control. But for Donald Trump to say that people who are Jewish but vote Democratic aren't really Jewish, and that Democrats hate Israel, which was something else he said, this is again a reminder of a man who does not stand for anything. He's not telling you anything about the work that he wants to do on your behalf. All he knows is how to divide and to use hate speech to divide. And by the way, this is very rich coming from an adjudicated rapist who is enjoying so much support from so-called evangelicals who are doing far more harm to the view of Christianity than any Democratic voting Jewish person is doing to Judaism. Donald Trump can just sit down if he wants to talk about religion and religious values at all. But that's not all he's been doing lately. He also is continuing to spread the lie that said Iran suddenly received billions of dollars because of U.S. activity that went to Hamas to fund the October attack in Israel. No, no, that was never the case. It's been debunked eight ways to Sunday that the money that was unfrozen in a South Korean bank for Iran was not something available to Iran. Iran had been supporting Hamas for many, many years anyway, and did not happen in any extra degree because of a deal that the United States and other countries were involved in to try to keep Iran from obtaining and creating nuclear weapons. But again, it's easier to lie about that. It's easier to lie, as he also did, about NATO. Again, spreading the lie that our European allies are somehow financially stiffing NATO and that if they don't pay their share, that, you know, he won't blame Vladimir Putin or stand up with our allies if Putin, you know, were to not only conquer Ukraine, but then start moving into the Baltics, the Balkan state, the Baltic states rather, and Poland and elsewhere. And he says NATO matters more to the European countries than it does to the US. Again, from somebody who does not remember history and does not know the danger of letting a dictator run unchecked through Europe and what that would do to the United States in the end, what it would do to the world economy. But again, from a human decency level, what it would do to our fellow humans, our allies in these countries. So if he's not getting any work done, who is? Well, President Biden yesterday signed an executive order to support women's health research. The announcement calls for the National Institutes of Health to invest $200 million in the fiscal year 2025 to more than 20 new actions to address gaps in women's health research. It'll target issues unique to women: menopause, perimenopause, endometriosis, heart attacks, Alzheimer's, osteoporosis, health conditions that women tend to experience after menopause, and look to expand resources for women learning about their treatment options. Contrast that, by the way, we'll end where we started with Robin Voss, who single-handedly held up a bill that did not allow for Medicaid to cover women postpartum for a full year. Wisconsin's one of only three states now, three states, along with Idaho and Arkansas, that strip away women's postpartum health care covered through Medicaid after only 60 days. 47 states have extended coverage to 1 year postpartum because of the clear track record of serious health complications that new moms face. So Joe Biden and legislative Democrats and Governor Evers doing the work on behalf of women. And Robin Voss and Donald Trump, not so much. Today's Climate Check segment coming up next. You're up north. It's electric. Welcome back. We are so happy to be joined by Melissa Baldoff and a special guest for this week's Climate Check segment. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good, thanks. And we'll get right into our special guest because she's on the board of a group with a report that came out recently talking all about the clean energy boom that's coming to the U.S. and especially to rural parts of the country. And it kind of dovetails in nicely with the Forward on Climate legislative package that our special guest, Assembly Democratic Leader Greta Neubauer, is here to talk about as well. Leader Neubauer, good morning.
Thank you so much for having me. Really glad to be able to join you, Pat and Melissa.
Yeah. It's our pleasure. And Melissa and I have such good talks every week, not just about the problems that are out there, but the opportunities. And so I want to kind of hand this off a bit to Melissa to get into the first question with you. Melissa, you and I, you know, spoke a couple of weeks ago or so when that Climate Power is the name of the group, when their report came out on the state of the clean energy boom. There wasn't a lot of surprise for you and me, but I think a lot of people still kind of look and say, wow, do we really have that bright of a future in the green energy sector?
Well, I think we can. I think that it's up to us how bright that future can be in Wisconsin. We are seeing that from this clean energy report from Climate Power, that the president's clean energy plan has helped create over 271,000 jobs since it was passed. So that's, you know, those are pretty incredible numbers. And, there's really the only place to go is up. And I think that we know that there is a lot of capacity, a lot of, you know, possibility in Wisconsin. You and I have talked to folks from organized labor. We have talked to folks in the business advocacy world. We've talked to folks in the clean energy advocacy world, and everyone's really excited about what's possible. To me, what's so exciting is to know that we have folks in the state legislature who are forward thinking, who are looking to what's possible. And, I think it's very exciting to me to hear what Leader Neubauer and her colleagues are cooking up.
Yeah, it really sounds, Representative Neubauer, like the messaging around the climate, while still dire, there's a lot of glass half full in terms of potential, and it doesn't have to all be talk about the glass half empty.
Absolutely. I started working on the issue of climate change when I was in high school, and particularly in college. That was a while ago, over 10 years, and things were really different. We were seeing very little action from politicians, state, local, federal, on the issue of climate, and that has really changed. Of course, particularly with President Joe Biden's leadership, passing the most important, the most significant climate legislation in our country's history, and that is already making a significant difference in Wisconsin, with over 1,000 new jobs, clean energy jobs in Wisconsin, and $920 million of new clean energy investments just here in Wisconsin, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act.
So that came through the Inflation Reduction Act, but then at the state level, you and your Democratic colleagues, as I mentioned, put together your own legislative package. And I know we've talked about it, but it's been several months since then. I know that they're built on recommendations from the governor's task force on climate change. But what all is a part of that package? And then just as importantly, with a Republican majority in the legislature, was there any progress made on any of these fronts this year? So let's start with describing what all is in the package.
Sure. So as you noted, Pat, this package was born largely out of the governor's task force on climate change, led by former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, that I served on a couple of years ago. There were people across the state, various industries, backgrounds, who contributed to that task force. And we recognized that there was a lot that needed to be done at the state level for us to reduce our carbon footprint, to reduce our longstanding inequities, and to create good jobs, all of which are possible when we tackle climate change. This package is wide-ranging. It covers everything from investments in our schools to make them greener and healthier places for our young people, to supporting our farmers to adopt best practices, a green jobs corps, getting young people involved in the burgeoning clean energy industry. It is broad-ranging, as I said, and it recognizes that there are real opportunities for us to improve our lives here in Wisconsin by tackling climate change. It's not about scarcity. It's about opportunities. And I think that's what we're seeing from the actions of President Biden, and that is how we understand our work here in the state. Unfortunately, Republicans have not moved these bills forward. But as you both know, things are changing in the state legislature. We've got new fair legislative maps that I think are going to prevent Republicans from acting like climate change does not exist here in Wisconsin.
You know, so one of the, you know, criticisms we always hear about, you know, investing in the clean energy economy and about, you know, I would say clean energy in general is, you know, oh, well, you know, they only want to put money into the cities and, you know, they only want to, you know, reward certain kinds of communities. But what I'm seeing is that these investments are really supporting all communities. And there is especially, you know, a good bit of opportunity in rural communities and in low-income communities. So how did that, you know, how did that kind of knowledge help shape some of the legislation that you and your colleagues put together?
So we understand that in order to have the political will to pass policies that address climate change, they have to also make our lives better. And there are a lot of people in Wisconsin who are struggling to make ends meet. Those are family farmers, right, who may have owned land for generations. And the current context for that industry is that a lot of people are struggling. We have, of course, larger farms in Wisconsin and people who work on those farms who may or may not make a great wage because we're seeing economic fluctuations hit those industries, dairy industry, et cetera, hard as well. And then, of course, we have cities like the ones I represent, Racine, Milwaukee, many others, with longstanding persistent inequities, often along the lines of race, and then, of course, economic stratification as well. there are a lot of people in Wisconsin who need us to do everything we can here in the state legislature to give them a fair shot at a good life and to be able to picture a future for themselves in which their family is stable, they are saving for retirement, and they are doing what they can to give back to their community. And so we really did think about those needs that we hear about from our constituents in this package. And then I'll note again, one of my favorite bills, one that I authored this session is the Climate Corps. There are a lot of young people, particularly in our cities, who are not sure what the future holds for them, who might have significant student debt, who might be looking at their future and be unsure about how they can make a good wage that supports their family. And so the Green Jobs Bill, the Climate Corps bill, is aimed at helping young people get into those good jobs, hopefully union jobs, that are going to provide for them long term and that are going to make their communities better places to live.
You know, when I think of the lack of progress on these bills this year, it reminds me of a conversation Melissa and I had a couple of weeks back that there actually is a conservative climate caucus in the U.S. House. And just as they thought they were making some progress, because there are people on the Republican side that want to make progress on climate issues and job creation, they're hearing from the Trump campaign, you know, that they're not going to get any of what they want. It sounds like, and I may be painting with a broad brush, but there isn't really a climate caucus per se among Republican legislators this year based on their actions. Or am I misreading that? And you feel like if some of these bills actually came up for a clean vote, that they'd get bipartisan support?
I think they would get support. And we have had members of the Republican caucus reach out to us about some of these bills, about, again, funding investments in communities like theirs, that will improve their constituents' quality of life. It has clearly not been a priority for Republican leadership and for the Republican Party nationally. And that's why we haven't seen movement. It's not that people who represent Northern Wisconsin don't see that there's opportunities there for the people of their communities. But as I said, I think things are changing. They're changing really quickly. When I came into this body about 6 years ago, there were still people who were sort of acting like climate change didn't exist. Now, you can't really make that case anymore. And I have had conversations in the last several months with my Republican colleagues about the fact that there was no ice fishing in their community this year. And it's hard to deny that things are really different in Wisconsin than they were 10, 20 years ago. So I think we are going to see more movement next year. As I said, the dynamics are changing. A lot of Republicans are going to be competing in districts that are much more competitive than they ever had, not to mention that we could have a Democratic majority next year in the state assembly.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting because, to your point, you know, the realities are just you can't avoid them. You can't deny them. You can't ignore what's happening. So my question for you is, you know, if we, you know, we wave the magic wand and find ourselves with a majority and you are leading the Democratic caucus, you know, what is the first order of business when it comes to climate from your perspective? Is it passing these bills en masse, or is there something else that you think would be the top priority?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's hard to pick a favorite. All these policies, of course, are so important. But I guess I'd say the first priority, the most urgent priority, is making sure that we take advantage of the opportunities that are in front of us because of the federal government. I cannot overstate how many resources are available to homeowners. They're coming for renters, right, to improve the insulation in their homes, to save money, to have healthier, safer places for their families to live. Again, those EV charging dollars and infrastructure investments, these are things our communities need. And we also, we know that Wisconsin is going to have demographic challenges long term for our workforce. We know that there are a lot of young people who are choosing to go other places. Really tackling climate change in Wisconsin is a great way to signal to young people that we want them here. And this is going to be a place that is good to live as we face increasing weather events. And we are preparing for those. We are investing in resilience and we are investing in sustainability and in equity. And so I think there's just so much that we can do to look at those resources available from the federal government and to position ourselves to bring those in and to use them to make people's lives better here in Wisconsin.
We've heard some of the, you know, most extreme voices in the Republican Party calling for the president's clean energy plan to be repealed, you know, kind of like they've been trying to get to overturn the Affordable Care Act. Now they want to overturn the clean energy plan. People like, you know, the Derek Van Ordens of the world who are super extreme, you know, how concerned should we be about Republican efforts at the federal level to stop our progress?
I think there's a real threat. There is always a threat. We know how Donald Trump feels about climate change. We know that he will not only refuse to take this problem seriously, but he will move us backwards. And if we allow him to become the president and give him the majorities that he would like to have in the House and Senate, we will move backwards. And we do not have time to move backwards. We have to continue to make progress. We are already behind on addressing climate change. We are already going to feel the impacts of climate change here in Wisconsin for years to come, particularly low-income people and people of color. And we have to do everything in our power to build our resilience and to decrease our carbon footprint. There's simply no other option. And so, of course, would encourage anyone who is concerned about this issue to make sure that you are getting involved, because this election is going to be incredibly important for the trajectory of our country.
Assembly Minority Leader Greta Neubauer. Leader Neubauer, thank you very much for filling us in on this week's edition of Climate Check and more about what the legislature has and has not accomplished so far this year. It was great being able to talk to you. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Melissa, thank you so much as well. We'll talk to you again next week. And for everybody else, we'll be back in a bit here up north. Hi, neighbor.
Hi, neighbor.
We are celebrating the 95th anniversary, no, 96th anniversary of the birth of Fred Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, who passed away in 2003, but whose landmark TV show lives on, along with the phrase, a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
I love this man so much.
I know.
To the point where when people try to like parody him in cartoons and like try to make him seem less than what he was, I get very upset.
There was one kind of a quirk that he had that I now have and realize it's not a quirk. But you know how he'd come in and he'd, you know, change out of a coat and then he'd maybe put on a sweater. Mm-hmm. And then he'd sit down on that bench and he would take off a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And then he'd put on a pair of shoes. Well, when you're a kid, I mean, you don't do that. You take off your shoes and you're running around the house barefoot. And you're in your stocking feet or whatever. I'm now at that age, he said, reaching down where I have to put on my indoor shoes.
Oh, I got indoor.
For our orthotic support.
Oh, yay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got house shoes.
For middle age.
I got house
for middle age boys and girls.
Yeah, folks, you got to have some house shoes because your feet on linoleum, on ceramic tile, on hardwood floors, that is not good for your body. You don't have to be like jumping up and down. Just that constant motion, that patting down on your feet, that's not good for your body.
No.
Get yourself some house shoes, baby.
Arch support is a good thing.
Yes.
This segment brought to you by AARP, which is also noting the anniversary of the birth of Jerry Reed, who gave us all kinds of fun little songs, like this one from Smokey and the Bandit.
Pounded down, loaded up and trucking.
do they make what I would consider a screwball comedy? Because, I mean, Smoking the Bandit, that was a great screwball comedy. You had it going way back to the early days of film. And what would count as that? I guess some of the Will Ferrell movies, like Talladega Nights and all that, would, you know, they don't really have a point.
You know, no.
They're comedies. They're comedies that have a fully developed plot line. And then there's just people goofing off on the screen.
Yeah, you know, it's just, I mean,
Zoolander.
It's going to be pure wacky. It's a wacky comedy. Like, it's going to be wacky.
Yeah, my point being, we need more wacky.
I agree. And honestly, I'll bet you there's a lot of wacky out there, but with so much variety, you're like, my God, where do I find it?
Couldn't agree more. I want to see more of that. On this day in 1916, Albert Einstein published his General Theory of Relativity. On this day in 1971, the number one song was by Janis Joplin. Unfortunately, she had passed away 6 months earlier, and so this was Janis Joplin's only top 10 hit number one this day in 1971, and I'm suddenly remembering all the things we said about Amy Winehouse about a week or two ago.
So. Written by Kris Kristofferson.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he does not get enough songwriting credit.
No, he's one of the greatest songwriters ever, period.
Mm-hmm. Yep. On this day in 1990, speaking of prolific songwriters, here's a song written by Prince, but it was Sinead O'Connor. This day in 1990, she released her second album, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got, which included this Prince-written single. But nothing, I said nothing can take away this blues, 'cause nothing compares. On this day in 2003, the Iraq War, when the U.S., the United Kingdom, Australia, and Poland began an invasion of Iraq on this day in 2003. On this day in 2020, The Weeknd released After Hours, an album filled with lots of anxiety and paranoia that probably resonated well in those early weeks of the coronavirus lockdown. It went to number one in large part because of this single, Blinding.
I always feel like I need to be running while I'm like...
Yes, it's true. Now, here's a sign that, again, I'm spending too much time on TikTok. And by the way, if a guy about to turn 60 is spending too much time on TikTok, hey, kids, the platform's dead. Go find something else to play on now. Grandpa found you. I've chased you from Facebook to Instagram.
New
now
words.
You're here on TikTok. Kids, how are
you? Grandpa found you. Hey!
It's the internet's version of hide and seek.
Yes.
So pick a new one. Anyway, in a sign that I spend too much time on TikTok, there are people who will, you know, film themselves doing different genres of something.
Yeah.
Somebody the other day put up a country genre version of this.
Ooh.
And this person was right. It actually sounds as good or better as a country song.
I'm gonna look that up.
I know.
This was a sound. This song was a sound on TikTok when I first got on it. So when I hear the chorus, it takes me back to 2020, being in bed for hours at a time doing nothing and watching TikTok.
Oh yeah, that's what the kids did. And like I said, now the old folks have caught up. On this day in 1985, Canadian paraplegic athlete and humanitarian Rick Hansen began his circumnavigation of the globe in a wheelchair in the name of spinal cord injury medical research. It inspired fellow Canadian David Foster to work with singer John Parr to write the tribute song, Man in Motion, that we heard a little earlier this hour, which also was used in the movie St. Elmo's Fire. On the National Day calendar, I don't understand some of these. Like today is International Day of Happiness. I mean, shouldn't every day be? Look at you. To your happiness. It's a National Ravioli Day.
Oh.
It's National Alien Abduction Day.
Come on.
I should have had that weird Carpenters song ready to go.
Oh.
By the way, Sherry told me yesterday.
No. Say it again. What's today? Oh. What's today?
Today is Alien Abduction Day. There you go. Sherry says to me last night, hey, I forgot to tell you this the other day. That creepy Carpenter song you played about connecting with aliens, I'd never heard that before. It's weird, really weird. I'm like, I heard it 1,000 times back then, and I still think it's weird. This is National Bibliomania Day, National Astrology Day, Bach Beer Day, Great American Meat Out Day. Jeez. So I guess you're supposed to go vegan for a day. Is it macarons? Are those the things, the little meringue discs, and then they've got some buttercream filling in there?
I think those are macaroons. Right? I'm not sure.
I thought macaroons were like the things with like coconut or something.
Oh, it's like, coconut. Get out of here.
Look who I'm talking to about coconut. No, thanks. No.
This is small business. Know your enemy. Know your enemy.
Small Business Development Center Day. So thanks to all the folks who are helping grow our hometowns all over. It's National Oral Health Day, National Math Day, but then most importantly, National Won't You Be My Neighbor Day.
Yay.
Again, happy birthday, Fred Rogers. And we'll have much more coming up in the second hour, including our homeroom segment about